This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 75 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me in the cockpit is my ever-faithful co-pilot, it's Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And apologies for getting the last episode out so late. My God, it was torturous. Something to do with my schedule and bad sound design, bad sound recordings and all that sort of nonsense. But anyway, it's out. It's there. I hope you enjoy it. It's a lot cleaner than it was going to be, sound-wise, anyway. This week, as usual, we're going to bring you news and reviews of all the films which don't make it to the cinema and instead go straight to streaming media, DVD and Blu-ray. And this week we've got a humdinger because we got the excellent Filipino thriller By Bust, and we've got a very much talked about horror movie called The Witch in the Window. But before that, I'm going to do a capsule review of three films that I've seen recently, which include Robin Hood, The Rebellion, Future World, and a little-known indie film called Betrayed. But before we get into all of that, it's over to Rich with the DTV chart.
Okay, it's time for the UK DTV Top 5, as published on November 19th, based on the UK's official chart, Top 100. And there's six DTV releases in the chart this week, and we'll start at number six with The Bombing.
Yeah, so this is it's been in the chart for about 3 weeks now, I think, isn't it? This one, it's the Chinese co-production. Bruce Willis kind of stars in it, but basically sort of sits in the background, we think. Have you actually had a chance to see this yet?
No, I haven't. I do want to, but I think it's just unlikely.
You know, maybe when sort of Prime or Netflix pick it up and add it to
their
back catalogue, then yeah.
Well, from one Bruce Willis movie to another, it's number five is Reprisal, which has performed not quite as well, not at all as well as I would have expected.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see two Bruce Willis films out at the same time, for one thing. This is another one of his desk jobs, isn't it, basically? So he's the sort of, you know, the aging mentor kind of guy. We've seen him do this sort of thing before in things like Acts of Violence as well. And that one with Jay Duchamel, which I can't remember now, where he's a fireman. Anyway, never mind. He does lots of these sort of roles where basically he sits there and says, yeah, well, you know, the cops can't do anything and I'm the cop and I can't do anything except when I sort of break the rules and do stuff. This one stars Frank Grillo as a bank clerk whose bank is robbed and he decides to try and do the right thing and sort of identify who the bank robbers are, but it all sort of blows up in his face.
Are you as surprised as I am that this doesn't seem to have resonated particularly well with the public?
So what position is it at the moment in the top 100?
It's about 65, something like that. So, you know, really not. So I would expect to have seen it around 15 to 25.
I mean, Bruce's name isn't particularly prominent on the poster for a start. I mean, but Frank Grillo's start, you know, he's an up and comer. I mean, I thought he might have carried it a bit further. We'll have to wait and see. You know, might be a slow burn this one. Might pick up next week.
On to number four, British movie Robin Hood: The Rebellion.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about this in a bit more depth shortly, so we'll skip right on to number three.
This is a release that kind of passed me by a couple of weeks ago. I didn't realise it was DTV. It was put into cinema. It's one of those, they put it into cinemas just a couple of days before the DVD release just to raise the profile. It was only in like 24 screens. It's Bross, After the Screaming Stops.
So this is an actual sort of documentary about what happened after sort of the phenomenon that was Bross. I was of the age when they were sort of at their peak. I must admit, you know, over the years I've been quite impressed with Matt and Luke for the way they have carried on their careers. You know, they haven't sort of just gone vanilla ice and just, you know, been one hit wonders kind of thing. You know, because Luke Goss, of course, you know, he got into film. He had the brilliant role as Namek in Blade 2, and ever since he's been a real solid DTV performer. He's been great. Well, his brother,
and now director as well,
and getting into directing as well. Well, his brother has, you know, he's long held a spot in Las Vegas. He's been one of the draws out there as a crooner. You know, sort of doing the old Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin kind of thing, and has been, you know, very successful out there as well. So it's really great to sort of see that they've you know, been able to sort of be quite successful after, you know, being such a huge sort of stadium kind of level pop band.
Yeah, so this is all about basically their reunion, getting back on tour after like 30 years. Mark Kermode was reviewing it last week, I think it was, and he was saying some of it's like Spinal Tap kind of level. It's just kind of, it's really fun, but it's like some of it's just so cheesy you just can't help but think, is it fake or is it real or something? He said it was very good. So I would, you know, and I like Bros back in the day. I had the album and that. So I'd be willing to give it a watch, but only when it was on like TV or Prime or something. Really.
Sure. Yeah.
Number two, we have a family-friendly entry. It is The Littlest Reindeer.
I can't see who's actually doing the voices in this. It's pretty...
We've got the likes of John Cleese and who else is in there?
Jeff Dunham.
I think John Cleese is your big name, really. Martin Short's in there as well.
All right. That's not too bad. But, yeah, this sort of thing, unfortunately, just goes straight over my head. You know, I don't give this sort of thing a second glance. It's we're in that sort of period, and this is something that's going to come up in the washing up as well, where suddenly the world is trying to tell you, it's Christmas, for fuck's sake, get a move on with your present buying and stuff. You're not buying enough stuff. Mm-hmm. Get out there. No, this it's not for me personally, but you know, hopefully it's reasonably animated.
And the top film for, I believe, the third week running is Hurricane.
Might be even the fourth week running. I think we're definitely in Rex territory now, aren't we? We've got one that is just going to sit there for weeks and weeks, I think. I can't see anything else sort of replacing it at the moment.
Well, especially as things are quietening down now for the Christmas season. We're not expecting to see many particularly not a particularly large number of releases coming out over the next few weeks. This is dropping down the top 100, but there's nothing big coming in. That's why I would have thought, you know, I felt that Reprisal, I thought, was a shoe-in. You know, I thought it'd come in at like number 30 or whatever and it would be taking the top spot, but no.
Nope.
But Hurricane, well deserved. Good film.
Yeah. It's interesting because I know there's a theatrical film. Is it 303 Squadron? I think it's actually called 303 Squadron.
Yeah. 303 Squadron is the Polish one. Yeah. This is the British one. Yeah. Or they're both sort of British Polish, but the other one is 100% Polish, really.
Yeah. And slightly better.
That's in cinemas, but again, very, very limited theatrical release.
Sure.
I'm desperate to see it, but yeah. It was on last Sunday at 5:30 in the afternoon at the Odeon. Only screening, only time. There's pretty much nowhere else in the whole area to see it. So, and I'm not, because it's a Polish movie, they don't generally get DVD releases over here. So I'm hoping it will get picked up by a different distributor or whatever for DVD or for home, you know, for streaming or something, because I'm very keen to see it. But this is the biggie, really, of the two, because this just had a pretty big marketing campaign behind it. You know, it's got well-known, you know, stars in it, well, to a level, you know, Game of Thrones fans or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's capturing a lot of interest.
Just as a complete aside, you know, you mentioned, you know, the limited release of the 303 Squadron. We've just had I'm going to call it an Indian public holiday. Is it Diwali or something? I'm murdering it, I know. And they released the film into cinemas for like one night only, and that was a thing called Thugs of Hindustan. Have you come across this?
What's it called?
Thugs of Hindustan. It is
No, it
basically
sounds familiar.
it's an Indian version of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, I read about this on BBC. I think it's been
Yeah.
quite critically slated.
I'd love to see it. I saw the trailer for it, and I was actually tempted to go see it, but unfortunately, I was so tired I couldn't. But yeah, it's one I'll be certainly interested to see when it finally gets a DVD release, if it does. But anyway, that's the chart for this week. As you say, God knows what's going to be in it next week, because it's likely to be filled up with sort of stocking filler kind of things, isn't it?
As long as it's not do you remember we had last year? It was the Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas.
Oh, crumbs, yeah.
We had that for
Oh, that was
weeks.
awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I think 1 week we only had like three entries or something. It was something
Or
ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway.
1 week, it might have just been that
Yeah.
one.
Yes, that's right.
That's
Yeah.
how it
What a
gets,
lift.
folks, at this time of year.
Yeah. God. Anyway, that is the chart for this week. It's time for the coming soon section, and this week we've got seven trailers to take a peek at, and we're going to kick off with Leprechaun Returns. Now, we've seen a sort of kind of a bit of a resurgence of late of sort of characters from like sort of late 80s, early 90s being given a bit of a sort of dust off, a bit of a polish, and a bit more money sort of thrown at the concept. I must admit, I don't think I've ever seen any of the original Leprechaun films put out by. Is it Charles Band? The
No,
full Eclipse?
it
No,
wasn't Charles Band.
wasn't Charles Band.
No.
I must have thought it was. Anyway, I've not
But they're
seen any of them.
most famous for starring Warwick Davis from
Right.
Star Wars
Yeah.
fame. That's Wicket the Ewok, or Willow, actually, is probably
Willow, even, yeah.
arguably most famous as
So, I
well.
mean, of the original films, wasn't there like, somebody who starred in one of them end up becoming a bit better well known, or, sort
Absolutely. Well, the main one is which the film that this is a direct sequel to, which was the original Leprechaun, which starred Jennifer Aniston.
of. Ah, right. Yes, that's right. I remember now.
So what they've done here is they've ignored the reboot that was attempted a couple of years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago, called Leprechaun Origins, which I never saw, but I heard was like just nothing like any of the Leprechaun movies, because they're sort of very particular about the monsters, the monstrous leprechaun style and jokes and things like that. And he was just like in the darkness and just sort of drifting around. You didn't even barely see him, kind of thing. And this is like a proper full-on return to the same character, the character that we know. It's just this. It's not played by Warwick Davis.
Yeah, but I mean, we had the Puppet Master, the Littlest Reich recently.
Yes.
We've had the Child's Play resurgence, and with some really good Child's Play movies at that. And of course, sort of Halloween being in the cinemas. So, yeah, people are sort of revisiting this sort of period, of sort of the old sort of direct to video kind of movies that were coming out. Sort of giving them a pretty reasonable looking budget, and a decent looking cast. The script isn't too bad from what I can tell. There's got some bit of humor and some good effects. I wouldn't be I'd be definitely interested in seeing this.
Yeah, I think I'm a fan of the series. That this does look really quite decent. The series has gone in many different directions. Continuity's never sort of really been much of
Another
an
high
issue
point.
because they've gone all sorts of places. They put him in space and everything. In the Hood, they did two movies in the Hood. One of them
Yes.
with Ice-T and stuff. So they were increasingly comical. And they're going to sort of go back to more of the simple concept of returning to, I believe, the same the same setting as the first film. There's one of the guys who was in the first film, he's back again. So very much kind of a Halloween kind of thing what they're doing here.
Definitely, yeah.
There's some weird stuff with CGI, multiple tiny
Yeah.
leprechauns everywhere that looks a bit ropey, but as overall, I'm just really looking forward to it because I think it'll probably be the best Leprechaun film we've had in, a really long time.
That's damning with faint praise, but anyway,
Well, maybe
yeah.
it is.
But yeah, I think it could be quite interesting. Okay, so our next one really shows the importance of putting out a decent trailer to sell your film, because Clownado does not have a good trailer. It has a fucking awful mess of a trailer. I have no idea what
and loads of gore, isn't it, basically?
And it's not, I mean, you know, that seems to be its selling point. It's like, hey, kids, look, we've got loads of gore in this film. But it's got absolutely no context. You can't even see which part of the body they're attacking or anything like that. It's just a mess. There's no sort of clue as to what the actual threat is. Is it clowns? Is it aliens? Is it a tornado? Is it all three? Who knows? You know, I mean,
it's not clowns in a tornado. I think it's clowns during a tornado, from what I can tell. But yeah,
there's one bit where the three turn into a tornado, and one of them seems to have like a mouth for a stomach, and it just seems like a load of ideas just thrown at the screen without any sort of thought at all.
Yeah, it's kind of a it's just for the sake of it, just sort of one silly idea, just sort of ripped off from Sharknado, and you know, let's throw gore at it. And there's, like you say, there's no context or anything. The fact that Linnea Quigley is in there in a cameo, you know, is quite fun. The fact that I believe on the poster, Mem Ferder's name is attached to it, which I was quite intrigued by.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't appear on the trailer. It's a weird one all round, really. I'm not sold on it. No. I think, you know, it's just sort of desperate, you know, desperate idea, you know, really just it's not going to be any more than the title, I don't think.
Absolutely. Okay, so the next one, it plays like it should be just a sketch. It will be interesting to see how it plays out as a full movie. This is called President Evil, and it is basically a parody of the film Halloween, you know, the original Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis, but instead of Michael Myers, we have someone dressed as Donald Trump. And it might even be Donald Trump, you know, for all we know. and he's sort of going after, you know, sort of like Latinos and LGBT and all the rest of it. There are some very clever little bits, like the famous shot of from the original, when Laurie Strode sees Michael in the distance and he suddenly disappears behind the bushes. Like they copy that to good effect. The scene, again, from the original where Michael Myers, you know, everyone thinks he's dead, he's been stabbed, and you see him in the background suddenly sit up in one take, you know, and they sort of do a parody of that where he's just like floundering on the floor, he can't sort of get up, you know, because he's so fat, and which I thought was amusing. So this is a sort of very broad, I guess, political comedy, you know, sort of political parody, satire.
Well, it's another, like we were saying a couple of weeks ago with like Camp Death 3 and 2D and stuff. So like, this is the latest in the slasher movie spoof subgenre. This looked quite decent, but as you said, I'm completely with you when you said it's basically a sketch. It's it's almost like the trailer is the movie.
Yeah.
And they really didn't need to do a movie, because this was done, you know, we talked about it again a couple of weeks ago with the Halloween 60 spoof trailer short film, which was done. And, you know, this is essentially the same kind of thing. I'd watch it. I'm curious about it. I think it's a good, fun idea. Can it sustain a 70, 80 minute, perhaps longer running time? Not sure. It depends on how well they judge the gags and that, really, which is the always the tough thing with these kind of horror comedies and that. But, you know, I think, you know, it captures the attention, it's topical, so yeah, why not?
Absolutely. Okay, our next one it's just a shoo-in, basically, isn't it, mate? This is bread and butter for the DTV digest. This is Legion Max, directed by friend of the show, Jesse V. Johnson, and starring Louis Mandalore, who we had the pleasure of meeting back in September at the Fighting for Spirit Film Festival.
Starring Dominique Vandenberg. In his first lead role in
In donkeys.
In well over 10 years.
Yeah. So this is a very sort
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear. Can you hear me?
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I thought you didn't. I thought I cut out for a second.
No. So this is a very sort of tried and tested storyline about the, you know, sort of mercenary who gets amnesia, ends up sort of fighting for the good guys, and then his old gang sort of comes back. I mean, we've seen this a lot of times. It's yeah. always always good to see, though. And yeah, this is Jesse Johnson we're talking about. So obviously the action's really well done. Lots of proper blood squibs going off, you know, no CGI nonsense here. This I can't wait to see, basically. I love big fan.
Do you know much about Dominic Vandenberg? Have you seen the first couple of films that he made with Jesse Johnson?
So name drop a couple of films for me.
He did the first two films that Jesse Johnson directed, starred him. The Doorman and Pit Fighter, I believe.
Oh, right. Yeah, because it also had Mr. Scott Atkins in it in a small role as well.
Right. Yeah, so and both of those are on Amazon Prime now, if anyone wants to check out some of those early films of his. But the interesting thing about Vandenberg is he was a real, genuine French Foreign Legionnaire.
Oh, right.
So he's like the real deal, hard as nails kind of guy. There's even a documentary that was made a couple of years ago called March of the Devil, all about his life, which I really want to see, but it's not been released over here. And he wrote his autobiography in about 2006 or something. So he's been around the block, and he did do the sort of acting thing, but for some reason, you know, he turned up in small roles in stuff like Gangs of New York. Hmm. And that's with Martin Scorsese, has a lot of respect for him and stuff. And I just don't know. I don't know why it's taken this long for him to have his next big lead. But it's great that Jesse's being able to give him that shot and with Evolutionary Films backing it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's our friend Ross Boyesque sort of tied into this as well. Yeah, it's just great to see, really. And how hard is Jesse working these days? I mean, the amount of films
he's... I didn't even know this one was being made.
I know. I mean, you also got to imagine, we've also got, you know, his next there's two more Scott Atkins films he's done, you know, mixed in with this as well, because we still haven't seen Triple Threat. And there's the prison one, which I've forgotten the title of.
Avengement,
there you go. And this one. I mean, the guy's a fucking machine at the moment, you know, and the quality has been, you know, of a very high standard all the way through. Ever since, what's the one called with dog in the title? Do you know the one I mean?
Savage Dog.
Savage Dog, yeah, which was half a good film, you know, half a really good film, and half a meandering one, unfortunately. But ever since then, you know, Accident Man, The Debt Collector, you know, absolutely superb. This looks really cool. Can't wait for Triple Threat and Avengement Eyes also. So yeah, long may he continue in the director's chair.
Going back to Lewis Mandelor being in this, as he's the main villain, I believe he's using his Australian accent for the, like, one of the only times ever. which is quite refreshing.
It's really cool, because obviously, you know, it's a ragtag group of mercenaries that he's leading, so yeah, it stands to reason that he's going to get away with it. So with his accent, that is. So yeah, and yeah, great performance in the trailer. Can't wait to see it. Okay, moving on to a film that I do have reservations about, and that is Backtrace, starring Sylvester Stallone and Matthew Modine. This, again, it's a tried and tested story. We've had this before. I'm really, really sure I've seen, you know, this very story being told out before, where a guy is involved in an armed robbery. He's the one who makes, you know, stashes the goods, but then gets caught, has amnesia for some reason, and they have to sort of, you know, the police want him to sort of retrace his steps to figure out where he put the loot. And of course, his comrades in arms are also very, very keen to find out where he's hidden the loot as well.
Makes me think of a flashback with Dennis Hopper and Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah. And again, you know, I do know that one. And I'm, again, I'm pretty sure I've seen this, something very similar to this.
I couldn't tell if there was like a sci-fi element to this when I first saw the trailer. I was just like, oh no, I think it's just his memories.
Just his
But there seemed to be
memories,
some
yeah.
sort of another thing going on. But the weird thing is, it's like, yes, you've got Stallone, yes, you've got Matthew Modine, but neither of them are the stars. This is another Lionsgate or Lionsgate Premiere Grindstone Entertainment kind of deal, which is usually Bruce Willis starring in these. So I think we spoke about it briefly last week because the trailer had been released and then it got pulled, so we weren't able to discuss it
That's
properly
right, yeah.
until now. And the to me, it felt it. I was just feeling, oh, it's a real shame to see Stallone doing this because he's in Creed 2 basically at the same time,
Yeah.
and it's like one's a massive movie in which he's got a supporting role, and this and then one's a sort of a TV movie level kind of, looks a bit rough around the,
This
looks a bit
looks,
cheap,
yeah,
basically.
this looks like a Bruce Willis film,
Yeah,
a modern
and
day Bruce Willis film is what it is.
but but with him doing Escape Plan 2 and stuff, I guess this is the course that he's taking now. If he can't do a Rocky, Rambo, or Expendables movie, this is what he's going to be doing, this kind of stuff. So.
Got to pay those court bills somehow, aren't they? So, yeah, and I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know if this is true or not, but watching the trailer, I'm thinking, yeah, Stallone's the bad guy. I wouldn't be surprised that if it turns out that he's the baddie in this.
Well, when you get your highly credited actors who are not in the film very much, that is quite often how things turn out, I think. But no, we'll wait and see. I'm not rushing to see it though, to be honest.
No, that's right, exactly. Okay, moving on to a film that I'm reasonably keen to see. We're talking about Creed 2 being coming out soon. This is another boxing movie with a twist. This is about a Sikh who gets into boxing and initially is refused to sort of become a professional boxer by the governing body, and has to sort of basically fight as literally sort of fight for the right to enter the ring. It looks is it Mickey Rourke who plays his trainer?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke, who God knows what's happened to that guy's face, really. But this looks pretty
Boxing for
solid.
one thing.
Boxing, yeah. But this looks very solid. It's a classic sort of underdog tale. And I think it looks really, really good.
I do too. It was when I put this on the list, it was completely coincidental that I put it next to Stallone's Backtrace or
Sure.
whatever. This really is a Rocky, film in all but name essentially. The parallels between like Creed and Rocky Balboa and that with this particular story are really obvious. The production values look really good. The story looks really engaging. It's basically a can a boxer have a beard story.
So
That's kind of the
was
thing
that
that's at
the
the heart
issue?
of it.
Because I thought maybe it was his turban that was the issue. It
No, it was his beard.
was his beard. That's
Yeah,
ridiculous.
there's a the Boxing Association have a clean shave rule.
Really? I never knew
Yeah,
that.
and so he's not allowed to fight with the beard, and so that's what the court. I don't know how much this is based on a true story or
Yeah.
anything. It might well be, but yeah, this looks. This is definitely the most, I think, prestigious movie on the list this week, and
Definitely,
I think this is probably the kind of thing I would expect to turn up on Netflix rather than
yeah,
necessarily on DVD. One thing
sure.
I did want to point out was what the hell's going on with Mickey Rourke's voice in the trailer? Because it sounded like he was dubbed.
Yeah. I mean,
Didn't
I
sound
think
like his
that's
voice for most of it.
yeah, because there were times when I was thinking, is that actually Mickey Rourke? It kind of looks like him, but his face is like so beaten up. It really is. He's dead. I mean, his face is leather.
His voice is quite distinctive, and there's just like, he's got that sort of tone to it, and that, and that it sounded like a completely different person saying
Sure.
his lines for the most part. So either that or his vocal cords are even more messed up than they were, because you remember how he used to be when he was a youngster. He was really soft-spoken sort of guy like that, and he was like, pretty, handsome young guy, and all the cigarettes and everything else, and he's just transformed over the years, and he just continues to transform. He's literally unrecognizable as the man he was when he was in Pope of Greenwich Village and stuff
Yeah,
like
9.5 weeks and all that. Okay, so we're going to end on a high. But this is sort of like, there's a classic line in Die Hard 2 where Bruce Willis turns around, not to the camera, but, you know, to himself and says, "How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice?" And this is exactly what we have here, because this is the Quake. Now, if you remember way back when, we reviewed a film called The Wave, which is directed by Roar Utag. And this is a follow-up following the same characters who survived that film, who've now moved to Oslo, where an earthquake is imminent. And it's just a full-on, really cool-looking disaster movie. So, you know, expect all the cliches, but handled really well in that sort of typically clinical Norwegian style, I think.
Yeah, it is, but it's like the... It is the Norwegian sort of Roland Emmerich kind of movie, really, is that it looks exactly the same. You know, it's big Hollywood blockbuster visual effects, and just as there was with The Wave, which sort of set the template for it. I mean, this, it looks brilliant, but, you know, like we say, we've seen it all a dozen times before, but I'm quite happy to see the same old thing, but in Norwegian. You know, it just gives it that extra sort of different flavour. Yeah. I'd rather watch this than, was it San Andreas or whatever, you know, so something, you know, Hollywood studios, you know, we've seen Los Angeles destroyed so many times or whatever. There's nothing distinctive about it. And I love The Wave. And I think this is going to be hopefully equally as good. Roar Utag obviously is not behind the camera, because he's been off doing Tomb Raider and stuff. I'm not sure how well that worked out, but never mind. The but yeah, so yeah, probably. Hopefully, this will be out in the new year sometime.
Yeah, I imagine so. And yeah, and I mean, the characters of the first film have been carried over, the same family, and I'm really keen to sort of see you know, the woman who played the guy's wife, who was the sort of the hotel manager in the first one. I thought she was phenomenal in that. And just from the trailer, she's got, because she's so striking looking, you know, she's not young, but she's not, you know, she's got a maturity to her. And, you know, I'm just really looking forward to seeing her on screen again, basically. Okay, so it's time for our reviews, and we're going to kick off with three sort of kind of sort of micro reviews, because I'm the only one who's seen these, so I'm just sort of bouncing things around. We're going to kick off with a little film called Betrayed, directed by Harley Wallen. In this one, we have the mayor of Detroit, who is up to his eyeballs in sleazy dealings with criminal underground, in particular the Russian mob. But he gets a bit annoyed with them because they're sort of increasing their human trafficking racket in his area, and there's more and more girls going missing. So he decides he's going to break things off and start an investigation and all this. In retaliation, the Russian mob, led by a guy called Mikhail, kidnaps his daughter as a way of sort of reprisal, and adds her to their sort of list of livestock. So the mayor hires a very dodgy guy called Mike Wolf to basically try and track down his daughter and save her life. In the meantime, we've got two female detectives who are investigating the death of a Jane Doe, who it turns out was being used as a drug mule by Mikhail, funny enough, and she died because one of the drug packages in her stomach, it exploded, and they basically cut her open, took out the remaining packages and left her body there. So they got that investigation going on as well. So a lot going on, and unfortunately, not much to see. This is one of those films, I mean, there's a lot of characters, it's got quite a big cast, but it sort of gets lost in, you know, it gets stuck in the detail, basically. So you've got long dialogue scenes between characters, you know, sort of two different cartels confronting each other by sitting down and have a chat, you know, all veiled threats and things going on. Then you've got the investigation by these two detectives going on. You've got the mayor's daughter out on a night out before she gets kidnapped. all this sort of stuff going on. And then halfway through the film, we have this guy called Mike Wolf, played by Billy Worth, come in, and he hires TJ Storm and some other guy to help him rescue the girls. That is
now,
so...
can I just interject and say, was Billy Worth in Society?
No.
No, that was Billy Warlock,
that's
wasn't
Billy
it?
Billy Warlock.
Billy Worth. What was Billy Worth in? Because he was in loads of stuff in the 90s.
He was in Body Snatchers.
The Abel Ferrara version.
Abel Ferrara version. He was in War Party as well with... what was that other guy? The other Dylan guy.
Kevin Dillon?
Kevin Dillon. No, Kevin Dillon. Yeah, that's right. Matt Dillon's brother. Among other things. As well, he's got.
Yeah, it's quite a 90s cast, isn't it? Really,
it is, yeah.
Sorry for the interjection.
No, of course,
there.
No, that's fine. So you know, there's a couple of people who actually do stand out in this. Billy Worth is one of them. His character. If anyone's ever seen Chicago PD, there's a character on there played by Elias Katsoulis. And he's almost a spitting image of him, you know, in the way he acts and everything. He's really, really cool. The actress who plays one of the police officers, she looks sort of Asian, but she hasn't got an Asian name. I'm just sort of digging it out at the moment. Jennifer Gelsema, she's really cool in this as well. Does really well. But yeah, it just talks too much, you know. They got all this story, all this, you know, all this sort of seedy background and things, but it forgets to actually entertain the viewer. It's like, yeah, you're lifting a curtain on this sort of seedy life, but you're not doing anything to actually entertain me at all.
How long is it, Mike?
It's quite long, isn't it? It's an hour and 45 minutes. It really does overstay its welcome. I mean, it gets a little bit actiony towards the end, but you know, and on a technical level, there's issues. There's, you know, some of the audio feels a bit unfinished, which is a shame. You know, if they'd cut down the cast, streamlined some of the story, put a bit more money into the sort of the action side, it might have been a bit better. You know, some of the sound, the soundtrack works really well. It's a real mix of styles as well. You know, they didn't have a particular composer on it. I think they sort of borrowed music here and there. It's not a disaster, but it needs work, you know. So I think overall it's going to get a 4 out of 10 for me.
So this one is this available in the UK at all? I know it's in the US.
It's in the US at the moment. It was sent to me by one of the guys working on it to review, and I will be getting back to him with a written review as well. But I mean, it's interesting, you know. I read some of the reviews on IMDb. You know, the trouble is with people who write reviews on IMDb, that they have a very low tolerance for low budget films. So, you know, you got some which you think, yeah, okay, you're working for the crew, you're working for this film, that's why you're giving it 9 out of 10. But then just about everyone else has given it a 1, basically. But I don't think it's deserving of that. I think, you know, that there is some stuff in here. It needs a lot more polish, though. It's very rough.
Are John Savage and Richard Tyson in it much?
John Savage plays the mayor. He has, you know, a good hand, good few scenes. Richard Tyson, yeah, he's sort of the main sort of henchman guy, basically. Yeah, he's not in a hell of a lot. Like I said, you know, you're following about half a dozen different characters and their storylines, which sort of kind of gets in the way a bit. But yeah, so, you know, not a disaster. Don't give up, you know, guys, the people behind this. Just maybe cut back on the story. This might have, you know, there might have been enough here for a whole series of, like, Chicago PD or something. But there you go. Anyway, moving on to a British film. This is Robin Hood, The Rebellion. Now, this has come out just before the big budget Taron Egerton and Jamie Foxx big screen effort version of Robin Hood. This is not too bad, except in one particular area, which I will get onto. So this sees, you know, Robin Hood. This sets the film. The film is set after the Crusades, and it has Robin and Will Scarlet coming back and kicking things off when they see how badly Nottingham and the Sherwood's been run by the sheriff. And unfortunately, you know, his sort of rebellion is losing at the start of the film. It's like a war of attrition going on. You know, the sheriff's just got so much more men, better weapons and everything like that. They're actually trained for combat. Whereas, you know, Robin's sort of using like the local villagers to help him out and things like this. So it's a downward slope for him. When Maid Marian and his friend Much, the miller's son, are kidnapped and held at the castle. Yeah, so it forces Robin to lead a covert mission into the castle itself. And it becomes a bit sort of diehardy from that point on, where it's sort of set within the castle. The film starts off a bit rough around the edges. We've seen this before, Rich, where, you know, you've got this sort of low-budget film set out in the open, and it kind of looks a bit cosplay, you know, a bit Renaissance fair kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. You know, when you're shooting in the cold light of day as well, you know, the uniforms never look quite as authentic as they should. You know, all these sort of issues come in, and you know, you're not working on a set, and it kind of looks like, well, okay, put the camera there and we'll just shoot over there. You know, I'm sure more thought went into it than that, really, but you know, that's always how it kind of comes across. When it moves to the castle and you're dealing with proper sets and it's all shot at night, it looks so much better. You know, there's more variety going on because you've got, you know, using different parts of the castle. You know, it just becomes a lot better a film. And, you know, even Martin Ford turns up for an extended scene as well.
He's everywhere.
He's
like so much in demand at the moment.
He is, because he's always a welcome sight to see. You know, when he turned up, you go, oh, great, it's Martin Ford. You know, it does sort of lift things a little bit. You know, there's various actors that do that. Greg Grunberg, for me, always does that. When I ever see Greg Grunberg in, when he turned up in the last Star Trek film, it's like, yeah, Greg's on the screen. You know, it's that sort of thing. You don't expect to see it, so it's always a nice surprise when you do. The only issue with this film, you know, considering it's a Robin Hood film that is supposed to be, you know, swashbuckling and you know, bow and arrows and stuff going on, and unfortunately we get the bare minimum, really. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are sword fights aplenty. They're not very good. That's the main issue. And, you know, looking at IMDb, you can see that they had one guy doing the stunts. You know, one guy coordinating the stunts. So presumably they were using the actual actors and trying to sort of teach them to do the scenes, you know, and it just doesn't come off really at all, unfortunately. So it's a real shame, you know, because with the film of Gods and Warriors that came out a couple of months ago with Terrence Stamp, you know, that was a prime example of a low budget film putting the care and attention into its fight scenes and elevating it, you know, a hell of a lot. There are some really good scenes in this film. You know, really good sort of drama scenes between, like, for example, between Marion and the sheriff, where he's explaining what his plot is and how he's going to use her as a key element and things like this. And the way, you know, the general populace sees Robin Hood is a real good scene with two scullery maids. One of them wants to help him, you know, because she's sort of still idealistic. And the other one is like, no, you're scum, you know, you're the bad guys, because that's what, you know, the sheriff's been telling everyone, you're bloody terrorists, you lot, you know. And of course, nothing that she sees these guys do does anything to change her mind at all, you know. So, you know, it was an interesting sort of see that sort of perspective going on. I wish it, an extra week of filming, an extra sort of, you know, £10,000 sort of thrown at a couple of guys to come in and do some sword fighting would have been perfect for this. So I'm going to give this one a 5 out of 10. We're slowly climbing up, you know. And
I
let's
still
get
want to
to,
see it.
yeah.
So Brian Blessed's in this. God bless him.
He is. I nearly forgot. Yeah, and the thing is, watching it, I'd forgotten that he was going to be in it, and because it, you know, he comes in quite late into the film, and it is, you know, it is a sort of extended scene. Basically, it's a cameo, is what it is. But at least it's better than the guy who plays Hordor in Lord of the Rings. Jesus, in Game of Thrones, he turns up for one scene at the beginning, and of course, that he's the guy they use in the trailer to make everyone go, ah. It's him, it's Hordor, you know. And of course, he's there for like a split second, basically. You know, he came in for a day to sort of help out or something, I don't know. But yeah, it's. Yeah, but yeah, Brian Blessed's in it. He does quite well.
For me, the fun thing about that is that Brian Blessed already did Robin Hood. He did it with Kevin Costner,
Yeah.
but this time he's actually playing, I think he's playing Friar Tuck this time around.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
And I can't remember who he played. I think he was playing a Locksley, maybe, in
He
in
played his dad,
Prince of
yeah.
Thieves.
That's right. He
Yeah.
played Lord Locksley.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, so that's quite an interesting throwback, kind of bit of stunt casting that they've done there.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm sure Brian Blessed. How is Brian Blessed in it though? Is he, you know, is he broad and loud and, you know, engaged, or
Yeah,
is
I
he
mean they play it quite, you know, they play the character. He's obviously a friar, and you know, they actually sort of big up the sort of religious side of his character more, you know. So he comes across a bit more sort of devout than, for example, Mike McShane did in, Prince of
He was
Thieves.
just getting pissed all the time.
Exactly. So you know, he takes it seriously, and they do this thing where Brian Blessed is reciting the Lord's Prayer during a sort of sword fight montage. So you get his voice, our Father, you know, sort of belting out, and at the same time we got this sort of sword fight going on, which is, yeah, quite amusing.
Well, I'd still be willing to give it a shot just because of Brian Blessed, and it's a shame that they've, you know, because there's so many talented action people working
I know.
in, you know, even in the lowest of low budgets
Well, that's
over here.
right. Yeah.
So
Yeah. It's a shame it just doesn't come across at all. Yeah, the guy who plays the sheriff's really good. The guy who plays Guy Gibson, unfortunately, is very one note, and that is like screaming. But he does have this sort of extended scene where, at the beginning, they strip him of his uniform and leave him for dead in the forest. But he's not dead, and he manages to get back to the castle. And he has to walk totally naked, you know, just basically just cupping himself for modesty. But it's an extended scene where he's walking, having to walk around the castle trying to find his brother, you know, and sort of confronting him while he's still naked. It was yeah, quite ballsy sort of performance.
Literally.
Literally, yeah, no pun intended. Okay, so my third film that I saw on my own, as it were, that I'm covering is Future World. Now, in the last episode, I did mention this when we did the washing up, that this is one of the films I was looking forward to seeing. It's sort of co-directed by James Franco, along with Bruce Thierry Cheung, who was his director for In Dubious Battle, is the one
Yeah,
I'm
I think
thinking
that's the
of.
John Steinbeck.
2015. So this is okay. This is a bit weird, I guess. It's a total throwback. This is kind of like geez, a
It's like a
turbo
Roger Corman Mad Max knockoff kind of thing.
kind of thing. Yeah, sort of a bit Turbo Kid-ish as well. It's set like, you know, far, far in the future, even though everyone's still riding around on motorbikes, as you do, even though, you know,
In a desert.
in a desert, the world's gone to shit. We've gone through this phase of like building cyborgs, as sort of war machines kind of thing. But they all sort of died off, and the ones that didn't die sort of basically went into hibernation, to sort of hide away from the world. And the film starts with James Franco, who's this sort of bad guy, leading a motorbike gang called Warlord, sort of searching for this one of these sort of cyborg, and he finds her and reactivates her, and she becomes his weapon basically. But we're also following this kid called Prince, who's from a sort of more idyllic habitat area around an oasis. His mum's played by Lucy Liu, who spends the whole film in a bed, basically dying. And Prince goes off to find a cure, to find some medicine to help her. And he has to sort of traverse the wasteland, where he crosses paths with Warlord, almost gets killed by Ash, the robot, until she has a sort of weird sort of change of heart and rescues him, and they sort of run off together, basically. The problem with this film is that it's, for the most part, okay, it's very well shot, it's got a great soundtrack, it's boring as fuck for great, great periods. It just... It's very underwhelming for so long of the film, until Mila Jovovich turns up. She is fantastic in this film. She really is. She just lifts it so much. She runs this other sort of, you know, commune where everyone's a drug addict, basically, and she's called Drug Lord. And and she, you know, she's got this sort of manic performance, but there's this great sort of like rave scene, you know, and it's shot in this really nice sort of slow motion. You see her dancing in it, and you know, in this crowd of people, and she just looks so into it, you know, it looks fantastic. And yeah, and then you get this sort of decent action scenes towards the end of the film. But overall, yeah, it's just very, it just feels very slight, you know. I thought Turbo Kid did the same kind of thing a lot better. But yeah, very nice soundtrack. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad it exists.
Is Suki Waterhouse the main character?
Suki Waterhouse played Ash. Yeah, she plays the android. And Jeffrey Wahlberg, younger brother of Mark Wahlberg, plays Prince. You got Snoop Dogg in there somewhere as well.
I've never even heard of Jeffrey Wahlberg.
Yeah.
I've heard of
him. He's quite
one
young.
New Kids on the Block one.
Yeah.
Was it Donnie Wahlberg? Donnie.
Yeah. So
I didn't realise there was another one.
The issue with Prince is that he's just a wimp. You know, there's nothing to him. He lives in this sort of very peaceful commune. And yet he goes out. But he's got no skills or anything. You know, he's just going to get his ass kicked all the time. If it wasn't for Ash turning up to her, you know, or not hanging him as she was told to.
So yeah. Going back to James Franco, I believe this is kind of one of his projects. Like he produced it.
Yeah, he produced it. He co-directed it as well.
Oh, he co-directed. Yeah. Mm. So I loved him in Homefront, the Jason Statham movie. I thought he was an excellent villain. So how was he in this as a villain?
I mean, he's villainous, that's for sure. You know, it is quite funny. I always find it quite funny when bad guys, when things go wrong for them. You know when henchmen bite off more than they can chew and sort of take on the bad, you know, the main good guy or something, get their asses kicked, and then really sort of feel annoyed by it. You know, sort of get angry by the fact that somebody's actually fighting back. That's kind of his position. He gets in this fight with Mila Jovovich's character late on, and his whole attitude is like, God damn it, this is supposed to be easy, you know. Everyone's supposed to die when I punch them or something, and she's not dying, you know, she just keeps going for me. And it's like, yeah, it's like somebody's thrown the script away and he's not happy about it. So, yeah, he has moments, basically.
Mm. And Mila Jovovich is quite a principal character, or extended cameo, or
no? She's quite. I mean, she comes into it quite late, probably about halfway through the film. But yeah, no, I really liked her when she was in it. Yeah, she's got, you know, quite a layered sort of performance as well. It comes across really well.
So, is there enough in this film to warrant, you know, the general, you know, if you're not decided whether you want to see it or not? Is there enough in there to recommend it, or would you say you'd be better off watching, you know, this, that, or the other?
I could probably think of a few other films which I'd recommend above this, certainly. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who's still a Mila Jovovich fan, this is definitely worth seeing. Yeah, I mean, you know, of this sort of film, you know, this kind of scenario, I guess, the domestics, which still hasn't come out over here, just knocks 10 bells out of this. You know, for the same sort of running time, it is just packed full of incident and things to do and things, you know, things to root for. This just has sort of long periods of introspection. And it can't really cut, you know, it can't really carry it. Did you see the film The Machine with Katie
Toby
Lutz?
Stevens.
Yes.
The Toby Stevens one. I keep meaning to. I really do, but it's always lower on the priorities list. But I'm very curious about it.
I really like that. And for, you know, that sort of film where you got like a beautiful AI kind of sort of as one of the main characters, I much preferred that over this.
I think it got kind of overshadowed by Ex Machina, didn't it?
Yeah, that did, yeah,
I
unfortunately.
think it was around the same time. I think it was before actually, but it's yeah, the yeah, I'm not going to bother with this one, I don't think, to be honest.
Again, you know, Prime, Netflix, definitely, you know, be worth seeing on there, but otherwise, yeah, I'd wait.
So what did
So
you score it, or have you scored it
this, I
yet?
haven't scored it yet. I'm going to give this a six. It should be a five, but Milla Jovovich has pushed it up to a six. Yeah, Lucy Liu unfortunately is wasted in this film. You know, she like I said, she spends nearly all her scenes in bed asleep until the end, and then she gets out of bed, and that's about it. But yeah, not terrible. Not the film I wanted it to be personally. So that is my three capsule reviews. So we've had a four, a five, and a six out of me, so not too bad, I guess, overall. But on with the proper stuff. Our first main review this week is Buy Bust. Now, this is a film which has been on our radar for quite a while, ever since the sort of making of behind the scenes trailer was put out at the beginning of the year. So, you know, we've been looking forward to seeing this for a while, and it's a film that does not disappoint, I think. This stars Anne Curtis as a rookie cop who has just come off the back of a really bad operation which saw her whole team get massacred, and she's been thrown in the fray again with a new team where they're going into the slums of Manila to arrest a drug dealer. But before they get there, while they're surveilling the place, it turns out that someone's tipped him off, and it all goes to hell, literally, as her and her team are cut off from the outside, and not only have to fight the drug dealer and his gang, but also the hundreds and hundreds of people living in the area who are in the pay of these guys.
And the wives of the men
Oh.
who've been murdered, get murdered and stuff as well.
Absolutely. So, this is one of two of the most violent films I have seen in a long time. This is not hyperbole on any level. It is only surpassed in the terms of literal violence by a film called The Night Comes for Us, which is also available on Netflix, starring Joe Taslim and Iko Uwe. But this is an exemplary action movie. It is exhausting to watch. You know, the film almost becomes just one long action scene. As soon as it goes wrong, it stays going wrong, and even worse as it goes on. It's one of those films where, you know, where you have a team, and through, you know, the course of the evening, you know, they're getting whittled down one by one.
Attrition once again.
That's it. So, I was really impressed with this. You know, the scale of it, and just the, you know, the full-onness of it, basically. But Rich, how about you?
Well, I didn't love it as much as you did. I was watching it for a while, and I was thinking, this really reminds me of something. And I messaged, I think I put up a message for you and that at the time. And I was like, it's aliens. It's like, it's so much like aliens, which I suppose, you know, aliens was supposed to be Vietnam War in space, and this is kind of going back on that as like the Philippines sort of version. But the people are just everywhere, just coming at them from all sides. And it's like, as you
That's
say, it's everybody. It's not just the sort of crazy drug addicts. It's the, you know, the locals who are just, you know, bent out of shape by the fact that these people who, you know, represent the authorities who, you know, they've essentially been abandoned by, they just don't want anything to do with them. So they just want them to get away. So they just want to, you know, go after them with everything them, they've got.
Just kill them as quickly as possible so we can get some sleep, for God's sake. You know, that's kind of the attitude.
I didn't think it was as gratuitously violent as I was expecting. I mean, it is very violent, but a lot of it is off screen or cutaways. So
it doesn't dwell on it. I mentioned this film, The Night Comes for Us, where that shows every single stabbing, every single, you know, knife going in and sort of gouging bits out, and, you know, gunshots, all the rest of it. You know, this doesn't. It's not as voyeuristic about the violence. You know, it's happening there, but it's not dwelling on anything in particular. You know, there's a couple of bits later on where someone gets stabbed in the thigh and then the knife is sort of dragged down the thigh while it's inside. Oh, yeah. You know, so that sort of thing, which is, you know, always gonna make you squirm watching it. But it's very quick violence in this, isn't it? You know, it's like people are going down left, right and center, but it's not being as voyeuristic.
It is very, very stabby.
Yes.
as I said, again, something I tweeted or whatever, it's like, it's so stabby. It's like you haven't seen so many people getting stabbed. But, you know, knives are efficient, you know, they don't take the weapons and stuff. So it makes sense. I mean, I don't know if that ties in with the sort of local martial arts that they do, the special forces kind of training. It's like the knife fighting seems to be very particular to the region or something. But yeah, it's a heavy involvement in there. So I, you know, you're saying it's an exemplary action. For me, it was too long. It should have been half as long as it was. It was 2 hours 7.
2 hours 7, exactly. You're right, it does go on too long. And the other main niggle with it is, you know, it's a very level film. You know, it doesn't change pace too much throughout. And it needs, for want of a better word, it needs, you know, a couple of big set pieces to sort of break things up.
Well, there's that big, there's that quite impressive long take sequence.
Mm.
That happens across the rooftops and stuff. It just sort of keeps going.
Yeah.
But did you feel like I'm guessing you probably didn't, but when I was watching the fight scenes or, you know, all the martial arts stuff that was in there, a lot of it felt like, not like rehearsal footage. It didn't feel like I was watching a real fight. It was like practiced. I don't know if they were pulling their punches or whatever, but it was like two, you know, following the rhythm of, right, I'm doing this, you're doing this, rather than it actually feeling authentic. So it didn't cross over to anything like the Raid kind of level for me.
No, you're right. It wasn't quite that at that level.
But I did really like that long take sequence again, although it looked a bit too practiced. The fluidity of the camera work and everything was really good, and, you know, the energy that it takes to go around to do that kind of thing. Was impressive as well. Again, it's kind of become a staple of action movies at the moment, doing these one-take action scenes. But, you know, this is another good one. I didn't think it was necessarily the best one I've seen this year. But, and the other thing that really struck me, okay, so I don't know what his name was, but you got the sort of big shaven-headed guy. Mm. I don't know if he's the Brandon guy who's credited on the poster.
Is that the sort of the Filipino version of Martin Ford?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, he's the really, really big guy, and he's basically Michael Myers.
Yeah.
because he is unstoppable. He gets stabbed and shot and even electrocuted. He kills someone with a pair of shears by decapitating them, and he throws a motorbike at someone.
Yeah.
So it's like he's got superhuman strength. He's unkillable, it seems. And that was sort of a bit too, you know, most of it's quite grounded. You know, we watched way back when that Brazilian film, which was also the title translated as Special Forces, which also had a female lead. And I was reminded of that a similar kind of thing. But this doesn't have that much weight. There's not as much, there's not really much character development or anything going on here. It is very much the Aliens kind of thing of, you know, there's someone amongst us who set us up kind of thing. You know, you kind of know who it is. Hmm. They terminate that plot line really a lot quicker than I was expecting they were going to. They kind of, it's kind of a big thing. And then it's kind of, because the film's so long, it's kind of dealt with, and then sort of move on. And they've got all these other sort of colourful characters like that crack smoking guy with the sunglasses and that running around. And there's enough in it. It wasn't everything I hoped it would be, but I think if it had been shorter, I would have felt a lot more. I would have felt a lot better about it.
There's a nice sort of very cynical moment right at the end of the film where we get sort of the news report of everything that had happened that night. And the sort of news report is incredibly downplaying the amount of people who died. They sort of basically say, oh yeah, like 5 drug dealers happened to get killed last night. But this sort of the overhead helicopter shot just shows like,
thousands everywhere.
Of bodies just lying in the streets of this slum. It's just made me laugh. The sort of the real sort of cynical nature of the attitude of the film crew. It's good. I really enjoyed it. It wasn't, as you say, it could have been shorter. It could have been a bit punchier with some of its set pieces. But I thought Anne Curtis did really well.
And here's the other thing. I don't know if this is typical of Philippine cinema or the culture in general. Most of it was Tagalog, but every now and then there was a line in English, in a sentence.
Well, this is the sort of thing you get with Indian films as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it is kind of the whole thing. Funny enough, my wife was sort of saying she'd read an article recently where somebody had actually said, so when Filipinos are speaking, they'll never speak a whole sentence in Tagalog. There'll always be an English word in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's just, as you say, it's kind of part of the culture.
Was there an English, British presence?
Yeah, definitely. It was.
I don't know the history of the.
All right. It was a Spanish colony for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think at the turn of the 19th century, there was a huge revolution and things. And then, of course, the Second World War kicked off, America had a huge influence on its future from the, sort of the Second World War onwards. Yeah, okay. I think that's where that comes from. That's why when you hear Filipinos speaking English, it always sounds American.
Interesting. It didn't even occur to me that the American occupying or anything was to do with it. It was just really sort of threw me because something like Anne Curtis, when she was speaking in the English dialogue, she did sound American. So I was thinking, when we were watching the trailer and stuff, I was thinking, is this going to be an English language movie to a certain extent? And it probably is, it's about 5% or something of just these random lines.
As I said, it's like what we see a lot in Indian films as well.
Mm. Yeah, because of mm-hmm. So what are you gonna give it, Mike?
I've got to give it a 7.
Oh, I'm giving it a 7 as well.
Okay.
I didn't love it as much as you did, but for me, I think there was enough that, if it was something I was going to watch again, I would have said 8. But I'm going to go 7.
Yeah, hopefully they'll do the sequel. It sort of sets itself up quite nicely for a Raid 2 style sequel. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and we've also got other stuff I think coming out of the Philippines soon as well. I mean, that's that whole area. There's a lot of interesting movies coming. So, this is for me, this wasn't everything I hoped it would be, but it doesn't put me off seeing more. Of what's coming out of that neck of the woods. So.
I guardedly recommend The Night Comes for Us, but be warned, it is very, very violent.
I get put off when you say stuff like very, very violent, and you know, like martyrs and all that sort of stuff.
Oh no, it's not. It's not in that. I mean, it's a, you know, it's an action film. It doesn't go down any sort of torture routes or anything like that. But it's just incredibly visceral. Anyway, let's end that there. Bye, Bust. It's oh, that's the other thing as well. It's now available on Netflix.
Is it?
Yeah.
Bastards. Oh, I know. so I paid to rent them.
Exactly. That's what happened to me. Me and my wife rented it off Xbox.
See, all this kind of stuff, it makes you not want to rent films because you think, oh, if I wait a few weeks, it's going to be on. It's like they did that with The Debt Collector, didn't they?
I don't know, quite a few you know, things,
and,
yeah.
And various other movies that come out. There's like a 3-week window or something.
About that. Yeah. Of
premium, you know, rentals and stuff. So. Oh. Well, that, well, so cool for Netflix people, but annoying for me, for somebody who rented it.
Exactly. All right. Yeah. Okay, our final review is The Witch in the Window. When Simon brings his 12-year-old son, Finn, to the rural Vermont home that he's just bought to help renovate it, they encounter a malicious spirit of Lydia, the previous owner of the house, and someone the locals always sort of considered to be a witch when she was alive. But as so Simon and his son make repairs to the house, they find that the presence of the witch is getting stronger and stronger. Now, this was quite a bit of a hit at Fright Fest this year, and it got a bit of, you know, some good word of mouth. But having watched it, I can kind of see why. And it is a very refreshing film in that this is a pretty decent sort of scary film without showing any special effects whatsoever. There is nary a bit of CGI or anything going on in here. And yet it still manages to be a pretty scary film.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I can't think of any particularly big sort of special effects-y moments or anything in it, apart from some, you know, some prosthetic makeup and that, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you're right.
How do you find this?
I liked it a lot. It's got a fantastic father-son relationship at the heart of it. It's very much about this family story, more than the story with the witch, as it were. That's just brilliantly played. The characters are perfectly, you know, drawn. The dialogue and everything, the interplay between the father and the son. Which it's pretty much a two-hander for them for, you know, what, 80% of the running time.
It is, and
That just works really nicely. There's a lot of, you know, genuine, you know, genuine, you know, for heartfelt kind of thing that you
can
connect
with. Yeah, it's real chemistry between the two.
Yeah, characters. Absolutely. Yeah, the guy who's the lead, who I hadn't seen in anything before, he's you know, sort of an everyman kind of character.
You reminded me a lot of sort of a slightly craggier version of Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I guess I can see. So Alex Draper is his name. Yeah. This is the first film I've seen from Andy Mitten, who directed films such as Yellow Brick Road, which I'd heard really bad things.
I like that. Well, there's, it's half a good film. No, I'd go as far as saying it's three quarters of a good film. The only problem is it doesn't know how to end.
Okay.
It's got a real issue with its ending. It just doesn't know what to do. But I liked a lot of Yellow Brick Road, yeah.
And he did We Go On as well.
I've heard of that, but I haven't seen it yet. I think that's, if it's not on Shudder, it might be on Netflix.
So Witch in the Window is brief. It's like an hour and 15 minutes, pretty much.
Yeah, 72 and minutes, I think,
Well, you've got 77 minutes, including your credits. So the director, producer, and writer, he's also the composer. So you get a little bit of a John Carpenter element to this. You know, it's like the person who's created the whole story also has created the music. And the music is really distinctive. I thought that was an excellent attribute to the film as well, not just the cinematography and characterization, that which I thought played really well. It's you know, it doesn't overextend itself. The film feels the length it needed to be. There's some epilogues and stuff on there, which sort of, the film itself is mostly about an hour, really, with some sort of a little bit of.
And about 20 minutes of it is basically Holmes under the hammer, they're
redoing up the house and whatever. And that whole story, and, you know, and the way it plays out and the way it ties in with the ending was just perfect, really. So there's not really a huge, I mean, because it's the kind of story we've seen a lot, you know, this whole, because it is a bad house movie, a haunted house film. The film is even, the production is even, it even comes up on bad house production. You know, it's where it's,
I mean, I've been watching a few films on Netflix recently, one called Open House, about this mother and son sort of living in a house, you know, which is being sold and run as an open house, and creepy stuff's going on. And I hated that film, I really did, because the characters are so stupid. Whereas the characters in this are refreshingly sensible, you know, like when the big sort of set piece happens, the first thing that they just jump in the car and drive away, and they're like, you know, put the son on the bus, get ready, you know, you're going home. I'm staying in a hotel. I'm only working in the place during the daytime, you know, sort of reasonably sort of sensible sort of attitude to the whole situation, not sort of like, let's go back and see what happens next, you know. Which I thought was pretty cool.
I did wonder at times if it was going to go sort of Amityville horror kind of route, but it doesn't. It's almost like the antithesis of that, really.
It is. It's very low key.
It's very low.
There's a couple of good jump scares, but they're very sort of organic to the story. You know, you can see why they happen, sort of thing. And they work really well, you know. And it's not the usual sort of setup either. There was a couple of times when I was expecting something to happen, you know. You get this thing called sort of negative space on the screen. So you have one character, and there's a lot of space behind them, you know, and it keeps cutting back and cutting back and cutting back, and you're thinking, well, something's going to happen, you know, in that negative space, and it never does, you know. In this film, it's usually sort of, it'll cut back and there'll be somebody behind you or something like that, but no. So it kind of knows what the audience is expecting and then sort of plays with it a bit.
Yeah, I think the last time I tried to watch a sort of ghost story in this sort of vein was, I think it was called Ghost Story, the one with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara, which I didn't get on with at all. I had to abandon viewing that because it was just like you're taking the mickey. I know Tom Joliffe loved it, but that wasn't for me at all. So this comes highly recommended, I think.
I think so, yeah. The woman who plays Lydia has got a very sort of striking look as well. It's very low key. This would be a good one for, I don't know, sort of young teens to sort of watch, you know, if you're looking for a decent sort of scary film that's not gory or anything like that, you know. I think this would be a really good one to sort of put on.
I think the impact on the ending is quite interesting as well, because it's kind of got positive and negative connotations. There's clearly something profoundly negative, but it's not dwelled upon. But there's also, again, it's sort of the heart of the film, you know, the heart of what happened, you know, what happens. There is heart to it.
I think the reason they get away with it is because they're able to present a realistic reason for why a particular thing happens at the end of the film. You know, they're able to sort of say, oh, it's because of that. You know, not because of the ghost or anything like that. It's like, oh yeah, you know. So I think that sort of
And there's none of this, you know, we found a book of spells kind of cast an incantation, you know, that kind of thing. It's like nothing like that at all. It fits in with the rest of the film. It's just really low key, quite straightforward, really.
Yeah.
The way they resolve it. And it's quite masterful, really.
It is. I think Blumhouse would do well to sort of have a watch of this and look at some of their sort of bad habits they've been picking up in some of their films. This is straightforward. The scary bits are actually really, really well done. The one where they spot that thing on the landing, it's just like so well done. It's so drawn out. You're thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? But no, it just works really well. So scores on the doors.
I'm giving this one an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm joining you on an 8. This is solid stuff. Check it out on, it's on the Shudder at the moment. I imagine it will get a DVD release at some point. But it, if you haven't checked out Shudder, it's definitely worth a look if you're into your horror movies. You can get a 7-day free trial, presumably still at the moment.
But
But
don't subscribe to the Amazon version
oh
if you
yes,
instead of the website version, because you won't be able to see which in the window on the Amazon version.
yeah. If you've got an Amazon Prime account and you've got all those weird little channels, think, oh, I'll just subscribe from there. Don't do that. Go into the proper Shudder network, set up an account with them, and not only will you see that, there's also Downrange and Mayhem and hopefully Revenge at some point. A whole host of really good films on there, and this is definitely worth checking out. The Witch at the Witch in the Window. Okay, it's time for the last part of the show, so it's down to me and Rich to do some washing up. And we're going to kick off with a Spanish film called 10,000 Kilometers. This is a romantic drama about a young couple who are split up when the female character gets a job in Los Angeles and leaves her husband or lover in Barcelona. And the film is basically an exploration of their relationship across this long distance where they sort of chat on Skype and all the rest of it, and all the little things that sort of go with that, and how they sort of try and keep things alive. It looks, if you're into that sort of thing, it looks fine. Any comments,
Not
Rich?
I'm not bothered.
All right.
Couldn't
Skipping on to Attack of the Adult Babies.
be
This
more
is,
different.
it shouldn't be, yeah, exactly. This is, it's about a, how can I describe this? It's a sort of country retreat for gentlemen who are into being treated as babies, basically.
Infantilization, yeah.
Infantilization, there we go. And something weird happens in the middle of this, and chaos and mayhem and carnage ensue. I think this looks, once I get my head around the concept and the sort of grotesqueness of these sort of middle-aged, paunched men in nappies, which is probably the most grotesque part of the film, let alone all the carnage that goes with it. I may give this a look, is all I can
It
say.
reminds me of the I think it was one of the Video Nasties, The Baby.
All right.
Did you ever hear about
Nope.
that one?
Nope,
Which was
didn't.
again kind of a grown up baby kind of thing, if I remember correctly. Horror
Right.
movie, but yeah, that's I'm I like the poster. I think that's pretty cool. But yeah, I'm not bothered.
Interesting. Born Racer is the next one, with a
So that's
tagline,
pretty much one of the only, that's like one of the weeks. I think it's this week or some or la, it was either last week or this week it's coming out, and it's like one of the only DTV releases coming out. And not really a surprise because it's a, it's a motorsport documentary. This kind of stuff is bread and butter sort of Christmas releases. So this will sell really well. I'm actually really surprised it hasn't had a cinema release or anything really, but it's from one of the it's from the producer of McLaren apparently,
Okay. I don't know much
which
about
was
that.
a big hit last year, I believe,
Sure.
on the DTV chart.
Moving on to Dublin Old School. This sees, I don't know, some random guy going back to Dublin and trying to hook up with his old friends, finding one of his guys has lost his mind a little bit and sort of living a bit rough. I couldn't decipher the accents in this very much at all. I suppose it's sort of going for a Train Spotting 2 kind of vibe.
Yeah, I haven't watched the trailer. I was again. It was just another one that I was quite surprised hadn't had a cinema release. But it's an Irish film, and we heard Cardboard Gangsters earlier, much earlier in the year, and that was kind of a, I think, sort of trod a similar territory. I don't know. It's hard to say, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is more sort of drama kind of thing than any sort of thriller or any typical sort of DTV, really.
Yeah, not really our cup of tea. But moving on. Okay, so this is the first of a bunch of Christmas horror movies which are coming out. We're going to do a Christmas horror special, kind of like we did last year. So some of these you can expect us to be reviewing shortly. This one's called Evil Elves. I must admit, I don't know much about this. But even looking at that, I'm thinking, okay, that's the 12 Once Upon a Time on Christmas that we covered last year by the looks of the cover.
Yeah,
it doesn't sort of give much away.
The interesting thing is Evil Elves is the sequel to another film which is on our list, which will come up because we're looking at these in a certain order, The Elf. So this is a sequel to The Elf. And both of them have come out from different distributors, I think, like within a week of each other.
Next is I Am Bruce Lee, the latest in a long line of documentaries. Apparently this is better than most. The only problem is I've got no interest, even though I'm really into my martial arts and things, and you know, respect the iconography of Bruce Lee. I think I know enough about his life. I'm not really interested.
You've been Bruce Lee to death.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Had enough.
That's exactly it, right? You know. Harry Dean Stanton is lucky. I don't know anything about this one.
I think this was one of his last movies, and it's put out by Eureka. It's got David Lynch in it, which is interesting. Ron Livingston, Ed Begley Jr., Tom Skerritt. Performance of a lifetime, it says, from Variety. I was, again, sort of surprised this was quite low key. This was in cinemas, but it was a simultaneous VOD release. So it's mainly VOD, sort of DVD is sort of how they've been selling this. But yeah, I'm curious to see this one. Harry Dean Stanton's a legend. So definitely worth seeing, I think.
Okay, March of the Penguins 2, The Next Step. This is going to have a rocky time, I believe, because on TV we've got David Attenborough's latest series, Dynasties, which is causing a big stir. One of the episodes is all about penguins. So I imagine, you know, this has got some big shoes to stand up to.
Well, especially compared to, like, the first one. You know, it was a massive release, so I was really surprised to see a DTV sequel to March of the Penguins. You know, again, I was surprised that this wasn't a theatrically released film. So
no mention of Morgan Freeman on the cover, so I don't know if he's...
No, so, you know, I'm not particularly bothered, but yeah, quite an unusual... It's not a film that I expected to turn up in the list.
Sure. Okay, Mercy Christmas. I know we've covered the trailer for this. I don't know if it was under this name. It might have been a different name.
I don't know.
Looked at the trailer before. It's about a family at Christmas and, you know, all the usual sort of like family squabbles and everything sort of boil over into murder and mayhem. It looks, I don't know, I think it could be sort of 60 minutes of people's of simmering bitchiness followed by 30 minutes of sort of gore, basically. You know, as they start killing each other, I think it's I don't know. It could be good. It could be sort of decent black comedy. We don't know. Mother Krampus. We know from our colleague Dave Wayne that this is actually Mother Krampus 2.
That was a retitle because it's nothing to do with the original Mother Krampus, which was the retitle of 12 Deaths of Christmas, and who are working on their own sequel. So it's very confused. Yeah. The original title was something completely different, but I can't remember what it was.
And I think when Dave said he put the disc in the machine, it actually came up with the title card Mother Krampus 2. Very, very mixed. So that gives you an idea.
I mean, how lazy is that to release a film as a sequel, you know, titled as a sequel to a film that isn't even available as that title in the UK?
Exactly.
And then to put a title without the two on the front. This was originally the art for this when it was listed on HMV was actually Mrs. Krampus.
Right.
So they've kind of gone around the houses on this one and not really handled it very well at all, in my view.
I think these people have no idea about the legend, you know, who Krampus is and why the idea of having Mrs. Krampus just does not work at all. But there you go. Okay, moving on to Requiem for a Fighter.
Very curious about this one.
Really? I was going to skip this because, you know, considering we were looking at, what was that film called? Oh, Lion. Is it Lion or Tiger?
Oh, Tiger, yeah.
Tiger, earlier, which looks like a decent boxing movie. This looks like a horrible boxing movie.
Oh, is it? I haven't seen the trailer or anything for this.
Right, no.
I'm just going by the cover.
So you got this sort of guy whose son, who was an up-and-coming boxer, taking some dodgy drugs, kills himself by accident. And he, you know, his dad wants answers basically, and ends up becoming the coach of this other boxer who is his son's friend. It's all sort of very seedy, underworldy kind of thing going on, but doesn't look particularly great in my view.
Oh, that's a shame.
Okay, Secret Santa, Sleigh Bells Ring. Now, am I getting confused?
There's so many of these things.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a Frightfest presented one from the creator of Texas Chainsaw, from the creators of Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Is Texas Chainsaw 3D
a kind of film to praise that would be a big selling point? I don't know.
God knows. But I think I'm getting Mercy Christmas and this one mixed up.
Maybe you are.
I think so. I think this is the one I was sort of more interested in. Anyway, The Elf looks fucking awful. It really does. I mean, seriously, guys, have a serious think about how you're going to sort of market a horror movie at Christmas, and come up with some better ideas than this bullshit. You know, I'm not even going to. No, let's move on.
Okay, we're probably going to be watching this for the Christmas special, though.
I'll get into it then. Okay, so the last one on the list is William Fichtner as The Neighbour. We've already had a film called The Neighbour out this year. No, it was a couple of years ago. Damn it, time flies. I like the one
with James Caan.
No, there's another one called The Neighbour with Josh Stewart. Oh.
Yeah,
which is great. I heartily recommend that version. This looks okay, sort of quite low key, sort of weird thing where, you know, he's sort of spying on his neighbors and things. This is sort of seems to be a bit more like the Good Neighbor kind of thing, the James Caan one. If you get the chance to watch The Neighbor with Josh Stewart, I think that's fantastic.
I thought it was all right. I didn't love it, but then again, I preferred the. The other, because it's the same guys who did The Collection.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So very different films. But, Josh, what's his name? Josh Stewart. And, I'm just not massively struck on him. Maybe that was why I wasn't agreeing. But this is interesting because this got quite a striking cover. And it's got a big, long quote from Stephen King, which is unusual. It's low-key, but with a bravura performance from William Fichtner, one of America's great unsung actors. So you don't normally see Stephen King endorsing a movie on the front of a film. The other quotes come from Cryptic Rock and PunchDrunkCritics.com. Not Variety, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good to see William Fichtner in a starring role.
Oh, we love him. So, he's great.
Yeah. But okay, that's the end of the washing up for this week, and it's the end of the episode. So thank you for listening, and we shall hopefully get another episode out in a couple of weeks' time. Tune in again soon, and thanks to my host, Rich, for joining me.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments, and tune in again next time.